Hello, and good day to you from episode 16 of our podcast series, Project Breakaway, a metaphorical and literal time in the day when we here at Predator Cycling take some time away from working in the back shop to come and share with our listeners what we're doing, how we're doing it, what it takes to do it, our ideas, our innovative success stories, and even our missteps and failures. If you find yourself with an interest in bicycles, composite manufacturing, out-of-the-box design, or even curiosities beyond, I encourage you to stick with us, settle in, and learn a little. I'm Courtney B., co-owner and project manager of Predator Cycling. I'm here with my partner, RM Goganian, the other co-owner, CEO, lead design and engineer, and kid entrepreneur of Predator Cycling. How's it going, RM?
It is going wonderful.
Yeah?
We got a special guest today, so I'm excited.
Yeah, so you jumped ahead. We have a special guest in person, in real life, here today with us. She was the original co-owner of Predator Cycling, and she birthed you. So
yes, my mommy.
Your mommy is here.
My mommy's here.
Seza Azunian, welcome, Seza. How are you?
I'm well. So good to be here.
Yeah, happy to be in Tennessee.
Love it. Love Nashville.
Beverly Hills let you out.
Yes.
Great. So, welcome. And it's your first day here at the shop. You're going to be here for another week or so. And we're going to put you to work.
Yes.
Never afraid of work.
Yeah, there's a lot of things for you to do here.
Yeah. So, I just wanted to take this opportunity to talk a little bit about the history of Predator Cycling. So, let's jump right in. What do you remember about 13 and 14-year-old RM? And what was your reaction when he said, "Mom, I want to make a bicycle"?
So at 13, RM was in high school. And all he thought of was to come home and get on his bike and train. And he always wanted to make a fast and effective bicycle. And he started designing bicycles, aerodynamic bicycles at that age. I remember him drawing in his bedroom in our little Santa Monica condo. And one day he took his drawing to Russ Denny, who is a renowned bicycle designer. And Russ was just blown away by RM's design. And that's when it started.
But who pays for 13, 14-year-old RM's materials? Who supplied all that? Would you just scavenge in the local dump?
No, I had saved up money from birthdays and like washing cars and pocket money. And I paid for it with my money that I had saved up. Yeah.
Okay.
It was more than I wanted to spend, but yeah.
So how long did it take you to build that bike, the first bike?
I think it was about 6 months. 6 months, eight, 9 months. We ran into a lot of problems. A lot of problems.
We ran into a lot of problems?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot
has changed. 30 years.
It hasn't been 30 years.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
We ran into problems like sourcing some of the tubes because, like, originally you can't buy things like a la carte. I mean, nobody sells like one tube, they want to sell you 100 tubes. So like I had to get stuff like we had to get tubing companies to sell us like samples, and like I wanted a particular tube, of course, because you know I'm particular. So I didn't want the other anyways. It was a mess to get it, but we finally got all the tubes sourced and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And we got it made.
And you just constructed it right there in the house. Did you paint it in the house?
No, we had, we got the frame, Russ Denny, helped us build up the frame. And then, the first version of it was raw. It was just raw aluminum. And I sat on the balcony with, my mom's, Scotch brush, like scouring pad. And I sat there and brush finished the frame and then built it up. And I think I raced it like a week later, the next week I raced the frame.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some problems with it. So we had to go back and get it. We had to fix some stuff and change some things. But we got.
And back then, was it Predator Cycling or was it just my bicycle?
Well, there was nothing. It was just a raw aluminum frame. And the original name was Pegasus. We wanted to go with Pegasus. It was the original name I wanted to use, but I couldn't. So We later came up with Predator, but I think it took about a year before we started branding it.
I think we incorporated it in 2005.
Yeah, we incorporated it in 2005. The first one we built, though, was 2000.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's the black frame that's floating around here in the shop. It's still here. We have it.
So what was the timeline between that and when you said, I want to open a physical store?
So Aram was graduated college, and he was ready to go to, he did his 2 years at the Santa Monica College, and he was ready to go to Cal State Long Beach to do industrial design. But his people were started coming into our apartment. There was our garage, our apartment was like a...
Just to interject here, there's always a lot of people that just walk into your apartment. It seems like it was an open door policy when I came.
Yeah,
there were so many bike riders coming and going, and there was gears everywhere and tools. So it was then when we decided to get a storage space, and it was my father who really believed in Aram, and he just knew that Aram was going to be successful, and he's not the type of person that would say things to please people. He really believed in him. And he gave Aram $15,000 to start his business. Uh-huh. And that's how it started.
Yep.
And then you found the shop in Abbot-Kinney?
We did the store in Abbot-Kinney came a little bit later because we actually tried to get bike shops to carry. I mean, originally we were trying to get bike shops to carry the Predator, and that didn't work. Nobody would carry us.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had, at that time, we had a range of bikes. So we had some like more entry level frames, and we had some more like higher end frames.
Mm-hmm.
And shops didn't want to carry us because we were price competitive to like production Treks and Cannondales. So they would just say, no, we're not going to touch you. Like we don't want it. We don't want this bike. And so we got rejected enough times, and then we just basically said, well, let's just open our own store.
You're like, screw it. Let's go to Abbot-Kinney, which probably wasn't as like expensive or bougie as it was when I got there.
It was.
So you shot for the moon. The first, you're like, let's go here. No,
well, also the property that the space that we got was an awkward space. So it was going for way less than what the street rate was going for.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, I think, 600 square foot shop, but we had like 1400 square feet of yard space in front of it. It was an old house.
Right.
So we turned the front into like an outdoor showroom. We had our entire bike work area. We had made like a tarp over like a, it was interesting. We had like this tarp area that we had covered so that we could have an outdoor basically bike shop. Like our whole service area was outside in the back.
So you're doing retail and service.
We were doing retail and service, and we ended up doing like a bunch of events and like bike events.
You were doing like lifestyle branding before it was a thing.
It was a lifestyle branded boutique.
Like come showroom. Drink coffee in the morning and then come party at night.
It was too early.
Because you were doing art shows, or you were...
Yeah, we did art shows out
collaborating with other people.
It was a little too early for the bike scene to kind of quite get what we're trying to do. And also, I wasn't good enough at retail to know how to like quite pull it all off. And we had the idea, the vision we had. We knew what we wanted. We lacked some of the retail skills to execute it to its fullest. Also, I mean, we didn't have the massive bankroll to just go full gas. So we had to always kind of like piecemeal it. But we did. I mean, we did pretty well.
It was a hip place. Yeah. So many people wanted to hang out there. And I planted this beautiful Mexican plant, remember?
Oh, yeah.
The purple flowers.
It's the front. Well, it was cool because it would literally, so like we had this like patio front in front of the shop. And so my mom had planted all the flowers in front of it. And then we had these bikes on display next to it.
Yeah.
And there was this ivy wall. And so I had mounted bikes along the ivy wall.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just really cool. Like you go down Abbot-Kinney and you saw us because like there's literally like a 6-foot concrete wall dividing these two buildings. And then there's just like $10,000 bikes hanging up on top of the wall into like in the sky.
Right.
So like everyone saw it. It was
you were just before your time.
it was before our time. And, you know, I didn't know as much as I know now. It would have helped. I had a lot of information now that would have helped me a lot back then. So. Mm-hmm.
And that's such a thing now with, like, bike shops. It's like, come get coffee and have some food. And it's like a restaurant / bike shop / hang center.
Well, yeah. I mean, actually, my mom and I had that conversation, like, when we were first starting it, because our theory was not to be a bike shop where, like, you know, at the time, I mean, the biggest shop in LA, I mean, still, I think to this day, is like Helen's, especially on the west side. Helen's mm-hmm. Cycles is the biggest. We weren't trying to be Helen's Cycles. That was not our objective.
We were
trying to be a very boutique and more on the service side. So, like, for us, I mean, we had half of our interior space was dedicated to bike fitting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was bike fit studio, service center. I mean, we were the first shop in Southern California, I think in the nation, to be a Campy certified pro shop. I mean, we were going after like mechanical certifications and like all just high end stuff. That's all we went after.
Mm-hmm.
And like we actually like we were one of the few shops that like delivered, like picked up and dropped off bike services to customers. I mean, that's things that we did.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like we would literally go by people's house in the morning and do a round and pick up bikes, take them to the shop, service them, and drop them off in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
For like some of our good customers.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we had a lot of really high-end customers that did a lot of, I mean, they came to us for everything. They're at the shop once a week, twice a week, they were there.
And you sold quite a few bikes there.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's how the Abbott bike came out because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was.
And we had fabulous neighbors across the street. Remember the barbecue place?
Oh yeah, the barbecue joint.
Neighbors.
Yes, we had a lot of cool neighbors. It was a cool street. There was highs and lows of it.
But, yeah, well, that was my next question. What were each of you? What was your highlight and your low light of that era?
Abbott Kinney.
Yeah.
I'll let you start.
It was just a really quaint space, especially the front. We used to do the Tour de France evenings there. We used to screen
tour nights.
Mm-hmm.
That was a mistake.
Aline had made a nice poster.
That I used to record, which I don't think is legal, but I used to record the live broadcast of the tour
mm-hmm.
of 3 days, and then I would cut together my own highlight reel. Down to like an hour
mm-hmm.
and rebroadcast it at our shop.
I think once you cut it.
I don't know. I don't know.
I don't remember copyright law in college, but I think once you edit it and make it your own, and then I think if you have less than like 12 people, it doesn't count as a showing.
Oh, yeah.
As long as you weren't collecting money for them to get in.
No. We had tour nights. I mean, we had a tip jar in the office. But no, it was super fun though. But it was, oh my God, was it so much work. It was so much work to cut those things down and do it. But it was a lot of fun. We used to get, I don't know, anywhere from like a slow night was 8 to like, I think 35, 40 people would come out and they would all sit in the front, in our front courtyard.
Mm-hmm.
We'd have a TV set up in the front. And it was cool because it was a ton of people that weren't cyclists would just come. It was cool. Like, and people would order pizzas and like, you know, grab some beers and just everyone hung out in the front and just watched the tour. It was cool.
So what was the low light of being there or retail in general?
I think for me, I could say definitely the retail side of it, learning the retail side of it and the date. I think one of the hard things for me was the day-to-day grind of retail. Like you can't get ahead. It's just this endless, like you're always behind kind of mentality and like always trying to get to the next thing. It was hard. That was definitely hard. And trying to balance that while we were also manufacturing, manufacturing bikes. So that balancing act was super hard and challenging. And I mean, that is why we ended up closing the store.
Expensive.
That kind of rolls into like expensive. It was an expensive undertaking, not just the store, but like the inventory, like the day-to-day inventory we had to carry.
Mm-hmm.
And especially on the high-end side, you know, at that time we couldn't get a lot of replacement parts mm-hmm. same day, next day, like from distributors. Like we had to stock a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
So there was times when, we could have easily had $80,000, $100,000 of inventory sitting in the shelves of just spare parts. Mm-hmm. I mean, and those are like, you're not even talking about a lot of parts. I mean, Campy cassettes were $600. Like,
yeah,
you got a couple of those, some chain rings, some tires. You know, we used to carry all the sew-ups, $100 a pop cost. I mean, it adds up really fast.
Mm-hmm.
So that was definitely a hardship, trying to figure that all out and balance it.
Yeah.
And learn it.
Mm-hmm.
So
then you took Predator and you kind of revamped how you wanted to operate, I guess, and mm-hmm. you went more towards maintenance and less retail. So you moved the store to Santa Monica.
Yep.
Into a tiny little garage.
Yep.
The cinder block garage.
Yes.
So, which was not front facing, which you kind of only knew it was there if you knew it was there.
Yep.
So,
one of the problems that we had with the old shop on Abbot Kinney was we'd get a lot of people that walk in and talk to us about things and whatnot, mm-hmm. and then nobody bought anything.
And then there your day went.
Yeah. So, like, literally, we just like.
Which I actually thought was the case at the Santa Monica location when I met you.
Well, that's kind of my situation everywhere. That's why now the doors are all locked. No one's allowed.
Yes, I lock the doors. So what do you remember most about Predator at that time in Santa Monica? Highlights, lowlights, anything spectacular happened other than I came?
I mean, that's the highlight. I mean, you and Charlie are the highlight of Santa Monica.
You were there for like 2 or 3 years before I got there, right? I got there in 2012. When did you move to Santa Monica?
2008.
Oh, yeah. So you'd been there for a while.
Yeah. I mean, Santa Monica was that was a really cool shop because I think Santa Monica shop is where Predator kind of became Predator, or at least in my opinion of what we always wanted to be. We had Larry, we had CJ that were like, I mean, those are the main guys we had there. And just bike racers building race bikes and race parts and maintenance for other bike racers. I mean, that was kind of our thing. I mean, not everyone we serviced was a racer, but mm-hmm. I'd say 80% were. I mean, we did Taylor Finney's bike for the World Championships. We redid his bottom brackets and did all his sizing and stuff to get his bikes together. I mean, we had top pros in the shop mm-hmm. on a weekly basis. It was pretty cool. So it was fun. There we kind of really just went into our niche of what we, you know, what we are today is of just.
You started going more online there.
We started online. I think it was like 2009-ish is when we started. So we knew at Abbot Kinney, we knew that the future of our business was always going to be online. I mean, we knew that then, but we didn't know quite how to do it. And so in Abbot Kinney, we actually sat in the back of the shop with Zach, and my friend Zach and I would sit back there trying to figure out how to build this website with e-commerce and trying to figure it all out. It took us almost 2.5 years to build something that made sense. And we launched our first online store, and it kind of has taken off ever since then. So we focused more online for our consumer products and made the shop more of a retail space for like retail work on... I say retail service for bike service.
Carbon repair. Carbon.
That's where carbon repair took off for us.
You had the team.
We had the team mm-hmm. eventually. That's right. Right when I met you mm-hmm. Was when we started the team.
Highlight and a low light all at the same time.
Yeah, that was
fun, but also like a lot of work and expensive and just like
that was a lot to take on. But no, it was good. I mean, Santa Monica was a cool space.
I took care of the books.
You did. You took care of a lot more than mm-hmm. just the books. You took care of the whole thing.
Yeah. So anything else about that time in Santa Monica? Highlight? Low light, Seza? Anything? No?
It was hard work. There were times when Aram was down on himself and he's always so hard on himself. So trying to encourage him, pick himself up again.
I just slap him in the face a few times.
Ouch.
Say, man up, get work done.
I'm glad my mommy's here.
Yeah. Well, you know, two different types of co-owners. So, so speaking of, you stopped being a co-owner when we moved the business to Tennessee. So, do you miss it?
Or even Canoga Park.
Canoga Park because we deserve to forget Canoga Park.
Oh, yeah, there's Canoga Park.
That was only like a year.
2 years.
2 years.
I handed it over to you, Courtney.
Yeah. Well, I still wasn't a co-owner.
You were officially
tired worker.
Yeah.
So that was the same as Santa Monica. That was a service. And
yeah.
But that's when we started getting more techie, CNC. Tinker. That's where we started tinkering. Oh, yeah. We still tinker. But that was like learning curves.
Yeah. I mean, I think Canoga Park was also, again, well, so it's kind of been a trail since Abbot Kinney. Abbot Kinney, we got away from more of the face-fronting retail. And then in Santa Monica, we got rid of more of that retail and started focusing more on service, more niche-y. Canoga Park, it was appointment only. The front door was locked.
We were just prisoners of the valley.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't even think we published our address.
No.
I think it was, we made it difficult for you to find us.
You just had to follow the police helicopter.
Yeah, there was two police busts like a block from us. Yeah, and I think that's where we kind of started getting into our rabbit hole of like designing the new, all the stuff that we've been talking about on these podcasts, like for the last 15 episodes, 16 episodes. All of that is what we've been working on in Canoga Park, is where that kind of really came together.
Right. That was more of a, like, I don't know, learning atmosphere where we just like dove deep into, like, you started getting into more into your softwares, which then segued quickly into our location here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So back to my question. Do you miss being a co-owner of Predator Cycling?
No.
Do you enjoy your retirement in Beverly Hills?
I do. And I'm so proud of you, Courtney, that you've kind of taken over and pushed the company to another level together, both of you.
Yeah. Well, I said two different types of owners. I just push them.
And apparently slap me.
Just give you some slaps. Wake you up. But you are staying constant with everything because you talk to Arm very frequently.
Yeah, every day.
Multiple times. And
sometimes.
So do you understand half of what Arm goes on and on and on about when he talks about the technology side and what we're doing now?
It goes right over my head, but I listen and I try to learn from him. And the end product is just so beautiful. Arm makes the most beautiful bikes from the get-go.
Mm-hmm. And water bottle cages. And yes. Other components we're going
to
release soon.
And he knows how to fit people on bikes like no one else.
Yeah, and we've been doing a lot more of that lately, bike fitting. Mm-hmm. That kind of went by the wayside and then I guess they heard about you. The Tennesseans are coming.
I guess. I mean, yeah, I don't know how that happened.
I don't know.
I don't know how that all happened. But yeah, we said we weren't going to do bike fits when we came here. But
you're such a good bike fitter. And I'm just so proud of you. You're just like, you have these huge companies coming and interviewing you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's been pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Thank you. Got a lot of cool opportunities in the last couple of years. So it's
good. Because you're smart. You're smart. Now who did he get his smarts from exactly?
My brilliant. Mom.
Your mom?
My mom. I got all, yeah.
Okay. Okay. And then just a last question to kind of round up the conversation. So what do you see for Predator in the future, near future?
I see huge success. I see you're pushed forward already, and I can just see it going even further. And just I know you're going to be very successful, and I wish you all the best, both of you.
Arm, what do you see for the near future of Predator? Sleep.
Sleep would be nice. Definitely running low on that lately. No, I'm excited. I think we're gonna do really well. I'm really excited because for the first time, it's funny when I first started Predator, started talking about Predator, and like I would tell my mom these crazy things. I'm like, look, there's all these. I would read these articles like in Popular Mechanics about these robots and all this design stuff, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you're gonna make bikes with robots and they're gonna weld things together and piece it, and like this could all happen. And it's just like, and like now, like looking at it, I'm like, it's you know, almost 20 years later, but it's like we're actually doing it. Like we're really close to like all those crazy ideas, all these simulation stuff that I wanted to learn back then, and all these like manufacturing platforms that we ended up inventing that kind of sat in the wayside we've kind of in the last couple of years been able to put it all together into these like manufacturing platforms. So it's been cool. I'm really excited to see, you know, all of these platforms come to life this year and really see what we can do.
Yeah. Well, I see some big investor coming and cracking your head open and taking the brain and then giving us lots and lots of money. I see a private jet. I see a beach. I see bicycles on the beach.
Well, I could get
and I see a drink in my hand.
Oh, yeah? Let's have an umbrella in it.
Yes.
I could get behind that, too.
Yes. Oh, wait. Did I say what I see for Predator or what I see for me? cool. Well,
and all made in the USA, all made in-house. That is
incredible.
Yeah, that's something we've, I mean, that's something we've kind of always stuck to from the beginning, but yeah.
Yeah. Made in Santa Monica, made at, what is Abbot Kinney?
Venice.
Made in Venice, made in the Valley, made in Tennessee.
Yep.
So. And you're the golden team?
Dream team.
I'm golden.
Golden dream team.
So, okay, well, let's wrap it up. I'm going to talk about some recent news first. Engineering.com posted an interesting article about ARM and Predator last week, focusing on our use of the Lenovo P620 and how we're implementing new workflows. Check that out on engineering.com. ARM is also getting ready to record his ANSYS SemiWorld course and his GTC course here this week and next week. So that should be happening soon. We're working diligently on the Genius water bottle cages. They are printed. We are trying to perfect our painting techniques because we are not painters. And anything else you want to add before we wrap it up?
No, I think that wraps it up.
Okay. Well, look, actually, we thank you for choosing to take some time with us, and we look forward to future breakaways. Look for us on Instagram and LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and in person here in Tennessee. We ask our listeners to please share, like, and subscribe. We're available on all major streaming platforms. Thanks for listening. Have a good one, and find some time to break away.